Hello, friends. Welcome to the C3 podcast. I'm your host and co-creator, Myron Isaiah Bryant. Thank you for taking the time to listen and being a part of our community. At its core, C3 exists to create a safe space for us all to be humans first, learn from each other's professional and life experiences, and choose to co-create a healthy community of betterment. I'm excited for today's conversation with our guest. And with that, let's dive into the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to C3 Podcast with Myron Bryant. I'm excited for today's episode as we're going to be connecting with one of my close friends, Mateo, on his experience, the lessons and value he's learned through his journey, and some great things that he'd like to share with our listeners and subscribers here today. Mateo, good afternoon. How are you feeling? I'm feeling really good. I appreciate you taking the time and spending a little bit of time with us and just really having the opportunity to learn from your journey, your lessons. You've done some really awesome things that I think a lot of people will identify with, particularly within sports and, you know, tech and leadership, which seem to be coming up quite a bit within the past few episodes there. So excited for your perspective, the things that have helped to make you successful and to be to share those as a group here.
That's awesome. Yeah, super excited. And I'm very inspired by what you're doing. I think a podcast is something that I've always wanted to start, but never had the time. So like my good friend says, it's better to have friends with a boat than actually you having a boat. So here we are. You have the podcast, and I'm very honored and privileged to be on here.
Thank you, Mateo. It's everyone's fault, right? I mean, it's funny you talk about that. Like, we're really trying to build community within this podcast, right? And making sure everyone feels like they can come tell their journey. They can learn from each other, right? Like, that's a big thing why I started this, is like, people think you have to know one thing to be applicable to the next. Like, we can all learn from each other. And it really is just a safe space for everyone to share the boat and talk on the boat. So,
yeah, for sure.
Well, kicking it off as always, like people have reached out recently and asked about what the podcast is that maybe haven't watched it yet. And they always say, hey, it's a human first learning community. But human first is really important for me and for what we're building here within the community. So starting there, you know, who is Mateo as a person?
Yeah, great question. The answer varies, right? Whether you ask people that, you know, kind of got to know me at a young age playing soccer versus the people that I now work with that are in tech. But I guess both of those two personas have very, very similar core values at the heart. It's just an optimistic person that, you know, leads with empathy. And I think that's what, you know, makes me a human being, right? A great human being per se. So that's really who I am in a nutshell, whether you speak about the old Mateo or this new tech Mateo. But that's the gist of it. That's really who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the conversation there on leading with empathy, right? That's so important in today's day and age, right? Is exactly what we're doing here, is making sure we have the space to connect with individuals first and understand they're on their path, they're on their journeys. And that we have, frankly, the privilege to be on that path and journey with them. And there's more things that connect us than separate us from those experiences. You talked a little bit about your journey, right? In sports, specifically soccer, and then transitioning into tech there. At a high level, what's been your professional journey?
Yeah. So I started playing soccer from a very young age, around, you know, 14, 15 years old. I told my parents, hey, I want to drop out of high school. I want to go pursue sports because that's what I'm good at. I don't feel like I'm being productive right now in my ninth grade class as a freshman in math. I want to go do something with my life. And that kind of, you know, stunned my parents, but they knew it was coming since, you know, I was showing great success throughout my youth career. And then from there, it kind of, you know, led me to other opportunities, signed a pro contract around 16, 17 years old, played 3 or 4 years as a professional athlete, and then career ending injury that, you know, ultimately led me to pursue tech. So that's really how the professional track looked. The past 2 years I was at Okta in a pre-sales role as a solutions engineer. So working with account executives there, but that's been the professional track up to date.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I just imagine young Mateo on the field there, kind of getting your footing in life about what you're good at, what you feel comfortable with, and having that confidence there to actually go for it with it, which is something a lot of people don't have in today's world, right? It's just a confidence to be able to know their path and go for it. You know, where'd you get that from, that feeling like, hey, I'm doing the right thing, I'm going to bet on myself to do these things? Where'd that come from with you?
Yeah. I think the aptitude in me was formed from the upbringings, right? So I was born and raised in a farm in Colombia. At the age of five, I moved to New York with my parents. They worked blue collar jobs. So I kind of had those experience of like, you know, challenge the status quo. Don't be, you know, in your comfort zone for too long. And, you know, as I started to get into like my social groups and like high school and stuff like that, I came across Steve Jobs' speech, which was at Stanford, his commencement speech to the class. And he talked about something about like death, which is like something super scary. But for some, you know, it's actually very, you know, like clear. It's like, hey, I'm not here forever. If I'm living today and I don't feel like I'm having a good day for too many days in a row, then I have to change something. And that's exactly how I felt, you know, going to high school every day and knowing I had this gift in sports that I knew I had to pursue before it was too late. And that was the time to take the risk. So that's where it really like started to come out. But I think to answer the question, it came from like way, way back when I was like 5 or 6 years old, just seeing, you know, how things unfolded in the family situation and then transitioning that into, you know, my professional career.
Yeah. No, I just, I'm inspired by being able to take that step, right? I can't imagine how, for lack of a better word, insecure, unconfident I was in high school to be able to take a step like that. And you took it and you knocked out the park with that, right? So I think that's a lesson within itself. In terms of soccer, what position did you play? I played a little bit growing up and wasn't anywhere as good as you, but what position did you play?
Yeah, played center mid, mostly attacking, yep. So a lot of running. But yep. As I got into the higher and higher level, I started as a more defensive center mid. So I played the 6, the 8. Yep. That was kind of like the sweet spot. But yeah, that was a lot of running. I do remember that.
No, I played stopper for a few years that I did play and absolutely loved it. Need to be doing it more as I'm older, and I need to make sure I stay fit. And I mean, that's a big part of this as well, right, is making sure we're talking about the whole human there. I'm a very big proponent for health. You know, previous podcast episodes I've talked about mental health. Physical health is something I've been working on the past three or four years with a big change there and something that recented me based off of my childhood and upbringing. Is that layer of sports, physical health, still present for you in today?
Yeah, still is. I would say it's not as present as I would like it to be. I live in Cleveland, Ohio now, so the weather is not really helping. But I still coach, you know, after work and stuff. I like to be involved. It gives me, you know, that community vibe that I always look for, and just the ability to pass down what I learned, you know, in soccer, even though I'm not playing as much, but to people that are playing it or kids specifically, that's something that, you know, fills my heart and something that I value dearly.
And you mentioned that transition, you know, after the injury into the tech world, that's come up pretty consistently here as well. Like, how do people land or navigate away into tech here? What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I mean, should we talk about the injury part or the transition part or both?
I'll say both. Let's go for both.
Okay, yeah. So injury was a little bit challenging from the mental side. Wasn't that challenging from the physical side. It was basically my feet were falling asleep as I was playing soccer. I had to get surgery. After the surgery, it wasn't as successful as I wanted to be. They proposed a second surgery, and I was like, hey, I don't really want to do this anymore. I'm tired of playing. And that's when I got into coaching. After 2 years of coaching, I'm like, hey, I love this, but I need something that I could work from home, because at that time, I was looking to start a family. So I got married, and in my wife's career, we needed more flexibility. So I needed a work from home job that allowed me to move across the country so I could support her career as I was building, you know, my tech career. So for me, tech was the right move, but I didn't really know where to start. So a lot of, you know, the learning that I have is based on self-learning, based on Udemy, based on Coursera, based on YouTube, based on books. Like, all those things have been, you know, fundamental in that transition into tech. And ultimately, it was a friend that I had that was in a pre-sales role that showed me the ropes. He was like, hey, you have the soft skills. They will teach you the technical skills. You just have to do the heavy lifting and tie those both together. And somebody's going to give you a chance. And that's how it played out.
Amazing there. You know, as I think about that path, right, you know, it started with some adversity with the injury there, you know, accepting that reality, connecting on, you know, your family and what trajectory you wanted your life to have within that, and then making that happen, right? In terms of the learning you talked about, you know, being self-taught, I see that more and more within tech today, right? Honestly, I don't know how many developers actually graduate. And obviously solution engineering is different than like the developer component of engineering, right? Like, how many people actually graduate with an engineering degree? And even myself, I graduate engineering, I'm doing like complete like closing sales, right? So it's almost this weird dichotomy of, do you go to school for this thing anymore? And even if you go to school for it, will you even be doing it? So very, very interesting path there. But I do applaud you and many people that I know that have like learn these incredibly technical skills on their own. Because exactly what we just mentioned, you have 4 years where you can have someone teach it to you, or you can pick it up yourself. How did you go about that? And where did you find that drive to be to pick up this incredibly ambiguous tech thing on your own?
Yeah, I think there's a parallel between sports and pre-sales. Yeah. So that for me was super clear. So I tied those two together from the start. So teamwork, goal setting, continuous learning, all those things, you know, were easy to connect the dots on. But in terms of the actual learning, so once I had the drive, it was like finding the right materials. And that I would give credit to the individual that got me interested in pre-sales or tech. And in the Okta onboarding, I went through a 6-month onboarding at Okta. This individual, Bob Burgess, was the leader there, and he onboarded 10 individuals in that cohort and then put us into the field at Okta. So he was, you know, fundamental in my learnings. Everything that he taught me, I'm using now in the field. So I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity that, you know, Bob gave me at Okta.
Yeah. It sounds like you were, you know, surrounded by some great leaders that help enable that path. Once you first kind of owned what you could control, right, is that internal drive and being active and seeking out those resources, right? You know, that's what leaders typically look for, someone who's already doing it. But, hey, how can I help them do it better? And it probably connects to what you experience there as a coach as well. Before we kind of talk about that aspect of it, start to talk about maybe just some of the values that you learn from being in sports, being specifically in soccer here, that have applied to your professional career. What have been your professional values, agnostic of even being, you know, a player, a coach, or on the solutions or sales engineering side? What have been just the core values that have held Mateo to be successful?
Yeah, I think we touched upon it earlier. It's just optimism, empathy, aptitude, teamwork, collaborator, all those things that I hold dearly that make me who I am. I think you could ask, you know, anybody close to me or that met me through a friend, those are the core values you're going to get if you ask them, hey, who's Mateo and what are the core values that he has both, you know, inside his professional career and outside.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of how you're able to, you know, display those values, and everyone talks about leadership as being the multiplier, right? Coaching as well, right? How do you go about doing that on a day-to-day basis, particularly when there's a lot of metaphors in tech, right? Everyone says, oh, the AE or the SE is the quarterback, right? Or they're the director or the orchestra. There's all these metaphors about, you know, these lead sales types of roles and using the resources. And I always say that you're always part of the team, because I think some people get offended by those metaphors. Like, oh, you know, it's a QB, being a QB, it's a team game. It's like the QB is a part of the team, but someone has to orchestrate. How do you see that, right? Because a lot of times you are walking into these conversations with lots of people and lots of products and lots of things to talk about. How do you make sure everyone is a part of the same group and going towards a common goal?
Yeah, I think that is, you know, the butter, right?
Yeah.
That is the butter for the bread. So the way I like to envision it is, you are there to solve a problem, right?
Yeah.
And the people on the call should be working to solve that problem. And I love discovery because it not only allows me to learn about their company, but also their careers, right? So at Okta, a lot of the personas that we spoke to were people that had to make decisions that were not only going to impact the company, but also their careers. So if their purchase of Okta was successful, right, they would get promoted, they would save the company X amount, they would, you know, increase the security posture, all those things. And that was done through, you know, successful discovery. So on that first call, I always like to make sure that everybody has spoken and that everybody is listening. So everybody feels like they were heard, not just that they were listened to. That's a very different distinction there for me. And that's really where I've seen the most success when it comes to, like, all right, everybody is there to work towards that collective goal of, you know, finding the solution to that problem that is there today.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Just anchoring on what we're trying to do, right? Making sure everyone knows why we're here, and then that why is shared by everyone is so powerful. You know, I work within a nonprofit space there. So that's one thing that's important about missions, right? Is a mission is a very clear, hey, this is what we're trying to do. This is how we measure success and what we're trying to solve for in the world. I think a lot of, you know, for-profit organizations have that as well. In some ways, sometimes it may be buried a bit more in their website than the nonprofits, but everyone kind of gets that. I love that. I think that's really important for building that teamwork, is making sure everyone knows why they're there. Another thing you mentioned within that was just the ability to listen, right? And making sure that you're just not listening that way that you're just there and it's kind of flowing the conversation, but more so listening that people feel heard and listened to. What are some of the ways you go about doing that? I know active listening is all the rage, but really when you're doing these complex projects, understanding not just the business piece, but what you said, the personal piece is so important. So I'm curious of how you are able to execute that listening component too.
Yeah, I think active listening is, I guess, the big majority of it.
Yeah.
But it just comes down to being vulnerable and super transparent with them. It's like, hey, this product does this. I'm not here to, you know, reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
I want to hear what your problems are. Even if I don't have the product for you, I want to take this time and help you solve the problem. That's literally how it goes. So back to your question, that's the key for me. That's what I've found success in over the past 2 years.
A lot of people from sports have careers in sales, and there's like very active pipelines to recruit people into sales from sports. But there are a lot of misconceptions about sales too, right? Like, oh, it could be used car salesman, it can be dishonest, maybe all those bad words about sales. But what you've consistently said, I think the past couple of answers has been, hey, we're here to solve problems. And I always talk about the book To Sell as Human by Daniel Pink. Like, that is something that no matter what professional job you have, for the most part, you're solving some problem, whether it's a doctor, a teacher, SC solution engineer, sales, whatever it is, we're here to solve problems there. Is that what excites you most about the solutions engineering role there? Or what types of problems specifically do you really like to be to start to solve there?
Yeah, the problems I like to solve the most, I would say, are mission problems, right?
Yeah.
The impact problems, you know, not just solving a problem because it makes money, but that you're also making an impact. So for example, I worked with a nonprofit in Mississippi for Okta. It wasn't part of public sector for Okta. It was just, you know, a deal that came through. And it took us 2 months just to understand what the actual problem was. And it was like a contract minimum deal. But like the satisfaction I felt with the AE that, you know, they were getting, you know, the right product, the right SKUs, the right things to solve their technology problems made me feel like I was part of something bigger. So for example, they were doing things with like organ donors and stuff like that. So I'm like, hey, if we take care of the technology part, they're not going to get hacked. They're not going to have to worry about any of this. They could just focus on helping people get what they need to, you know, solve their healthcare issues. So for me, those are the types of problems that are very inspiring. Obviously, those aren't, you know, everyday problems, right? Not every day you get to help an association with problems like that. But those are the problems I like to solve in the role.
Yeah. No, I think it's so important that, again, no matter what role we have, we're all kind of doing this problem solving thing. And it can be really exciting and frankly, just really rewarding, as you mentioned, like how excited I heard or you get just solving that for a mission that does something incredible and you're excited to be a part of. In terms of just how you go about communicating that solution, I'm always curious about that from the SC perspective. Right. I always make the kind of triangle of SEs, right? There's SEs that are, you know, very close to the sales side. They're almost like AEs that are a little more technical. There's SEs that are incredibly technical, right? Hey, like they just know all the things about the thing. And then there's also like artistic SEs. I always make the joke that I almost watch them demo before I'd watch someone like release a new show on Netflix, just because they can show something incredibly well and tell an amazing story there. But when you have these conversations with customers, right? They're coming in with these business challenges. They're coming in with these things that don't always immediately map to a solution and a path to solve this key problem. And that's exactly what the sales team, the AE, and particularly, you know, the SC is doing. How do you go about taking this very ambiguous business solution is starting to be to position a solution that, again, yes, it involves products, but really is very clear that, hey, we're solving this for you. We're going to make an impact on your mission. It just happens to have these types of tools involved.
Storytelling. You mentioned it right there. Storytelling is the key, not only as an SE, but I think in any role, right? You look at the best speakers in the world, right?
Yep.
They are interesting. They are, you know, inspiring because they tell a story. So for example, that Steve Jobs story that I was telling you about, I think he had cancer like 3 months later, which was like, hey, he's telling a story, but he's also given a speech. So if I was in that audience, I mean, I was behind a computer and I was inspired. If I was in that audience graduating that day, I'd be like, wow, this is the person I want to listen to. So if we tie that back to, hey, I have a problem and I have to reach out to a sales team to talk about, you know, their SaaS solution that's going to solve it, I want to feel inspired. I want to feel like Myra and Mateo, Bobby Brown, whoever is there to help me solve this problem. But I need to understand how it's going to happen. And I think that's done through storytelling. That's done through making complex topics, especially in the tech world, very digestible and easy to understand, because not all the time you're going to get a CTO on a call. You might get an HR person that's trying to solve this, and they're a team of five. Yeah. They don't even have an IT team. So
I'm thankful you mentioned storytelling. That's my personal view as well, and personal experience is that that is the most key aspect of communicating that solution, right? No one wants to see a list of products. No one gets happy about that. No one ties that directly to this is how it's going to solve my pain. But having a very clear story about how that impacts me personally, as you talked about, as an individual in my role, you know, our organization, our mission, our customers, our constituents, like that is very clear connection on what we're trying to do and the problem we're trying to solve there. A bit of a, not hot take, but question I'd like to ask for the SEs as well there is, how do you weigh storytelling against, for lack of a better word, just the technicalities of it, right? There's a lot of things you can dive into technically. There's a lot of things you can show in a demo. I can kind of get into a very technical space, and sometimes that's very much needed. But then you can also just tell a story. From your experience, those conversations, those solution recommendations that you made there, has one skewed more towards storytelling, or have the successful one skewed towards something else there?
I think it depends on the use case, but if we're talking about a normal curve versus skewed curve, I think statistically, we do see storytelling as the major interest, right? And that's just engagement-wise. You get on a call for an hour. You don't want to listen about how OAuth or SAML or OpenID Connect works. You want to understand how this ties to your problem, and there's no better way to do it besides storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've mentioned coaching a bit there. We talked a little bit about that from a leadership perspective, making sure everyone feels like they're in the right spot to be successful. That connects pretty directly to leadership, which has come up in a lot of our episodes here as well. What's your philosophy on coaching and development there? Like, you've done it at a high level, you've continued to do it day-to-day basis. How do you start to understand your relationship with this player or this person and areas you can help them become their best selves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a loaded question, my friend, but we'll tackle it. We'll tackle it very, very clearly. So for me, leadership, my leadership style is more of a servant leadership. Yeah. I think I am the person that will give you 100% if your attitude's there. So let's say if my AE needs something from me, I'm more than happy to coach them up three or 4 hours. But if next week they're asking me the same question, and that's like, you know, hey, you know, we spoke about this for 3 hours. I need you to, you know, put your part of the end. So from that perspective, as long as somebody shows me attitude and that they're willing to learn, I am all for coaching. I am all for servant leadership. In terms of like sports, it's like there's an individual you have to coach, but then there's also a team you have to coach. So how do you understand the needs of each individual within the collective?
Yep.
And that's very powerful, right? You have an hour and a half training session. You have 17 kids on that soccer field. Each one of them is coming to soccer practice or to train, to have fun, to work on themselves. Some of them are pursuing collegiate sports. Some of them just do it to be with friends. All are fine, but you have to understand what the individual cares about. That's how you make them better. And I think it's no different in tech, right? If the AE wants to get better at this part of the product, well, you help them there. And now within, you know, your team calls, when you have the one-on-ones, that's what you're going to focus on. Hey, maybe do you want to demo this, right? Do you want to take lead here? Do you want me to, you know, loop you in this section and say how you had a similar use case last week with the customer? Like, all those things for me are what leadership is about. How do you involve people? How do you make them feel like they belong within what you're doing? And that has no hard line between soccer, sports, or tech, or anything in life. I think that's just a leadership thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think that was a lot, but I think and I answered the question.
It was a lot, and we'll continue to dive into it, but it makes a lot of sense because what I heard was that exactly what you mentioned earlier, there's this shared why, right, of us solving problems, but there's also individual motivators. And we talked about it from maybe the customer's perspective that, hey, this person may get promoted if they knock this project out of the park, or, hey, this is this person's frankly baby, right? They've been stewarding this project for a while there. There's all these individual motivators from that side, but what sometimes is lost is the motivators from the internal sales side of, hey, how do we get better as professionals, as problem solvers at its most basic level? And what are the areas that we're specifically I'm working on? Some people fall into tech or sales, whether it be SE. SE is hard to fall into. It's easier to fall into AE. there's barriers to entry for SE, frankly. But not everyone is like, hey, like I'm in love with this thing. I know exactly how I'm developing, like how I can get better. And sometimes it's hard questions to ask there about like, hey, like what's your development path? How are you learning? How are you going to get better? And that, to your point, isn't just tech or this professional life. This is even coaching. Some kid may be on the team just because their friends are about it and they want to spend time with their friends, but they're not sure if they even want to get better. They're just there to hang out, dude. How do you approach those types of conversations when there's almost lack of clarity and ambiguity of the why for that individual?
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak about it from the sports perspective. I think my tech career is early, so yeah. I don't really have a lot of, you know, stories that resonate well with people in their careers. I think yeah. it's the other way around. I resonate with, you know, my coaches and my mentors.
Yeah.
But from the coaching perspective in the sports world, I think I have a very unique view or insight because I was once in their shoes, right? I had the same goals. I had the same thoughts. I sometimes didn't know what I wanted. And I feel like as a leader, I could be vulnerable with them and say, hey, I know how you feel. I remember being 14 years old. I remember, you know, having a crappy day at school and then coming to soccer practice. And that, you know, affected how, you know, I trained, that affected my attitude, that affected my willingness to, you know, listen to the coach. All those things are something that I lead with. And then they're like, okay, this guy understands it. You know, I could tell him what's wrong. I could tell him what's not working. I can tell him why I'm doing it well, right? All those things for me are super important. I think that's been the bread and butter there.
Yeah. No, it's a connected conversation from exactly what you started with there, Mateo, is the empathy, right? You came in with a clear perspective of, hey, I've been there. I know how you feel. I know what's probably going through your mind, right? And when I was problem solving, when I was having this problem myself, these were some of the ways I found a solution, right? In a very human and centered way. I find those conversations are easier to have with people who are self-aware, right? Mm-hmm. And that's both in coaching and life and in professional worlds as well. That kid or that person that you're talking to come to that conversation knowing where they're at, knowing that this may be something that's a little bit weird and needs to be talked about, just makes a conversation easier and productive for everyone. What's the role of self-awareness within, you know, sports and professional, and it's this craft of getting better, right? That's very much so what we're talking about on this podcast. What is the role of just being self-aware about some of these things?
That's challenging. I guess it depends who you ask. I've met some, you know, professional athletes that were super self-aware, that were, you know, very clear on what they wanted. They were, you know, very coachable. I met others individual that were totally the opposite, which is both are okay. But I guess there's no true answer to that one. I think there's too many factors and variables in professional sports that could make you self-aware one day And then the next day you have no idea where you stand. And that's fine. I think the biggest barrier about being self-aware is the ego. I think some pro athletes are very, I don't want to say narcissist, but they are very like ego driven. Yeah. So like when they don't get as much playing time as they want at that level, their confidence drops and then they'll come to training. And if they have a lot of those days consecutively, they'll start to question, you know, who they are, how good they are. All those things play a big factor into the mental aspect of it. Yeah. So I think being self-aware is like a one day thing, right? Some days it's super clear and then other days you have no idea. And I think that's the part where mental health is very important. You have to speak what you're feeling. You have to surround yourself with individuals that are willing, but they're also willing to listen and provide advice, even if they're not going through it. They're there to just, you know, offer a safe space where you could share what you're feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm glad you brought up the mental health aspect as well. That's something that's important to just what we're doing. Again, being human first and foremost. You know, there's a lot of people who talk about mental health more and more today. And again, I've been going to therapy for 6-7 years and something I'm very much a big proponent of. There's still a lot of spaces where it's kind of not talked about, for whether that be through old traditions or taboo, whatever reasons people don't feel comfortable to talk about that there. How have you seen that vulnerability? I think you mentioned that word. Have you seen that just culture where I'm hearing as well as you're talking about that on a team, like what's going through? How have you seen that be best displayed such that people are comfortable reaching this self-awareness by first being honest with themselves and being honest with others?
Yeah. Let me make sure I'm understanding the question.
Yeah.
And this is the SE talking here.
Yeah.
So question is, how do we get individuals to start to be more self-aware and, you know, start to look at mental health, you know, possibilities or alternatives to improve that aspect of their life?
Yeah, particularly from, I guess, a culture standpoint, right? As you're talking about from a team perspective and being surrounded in an environment where that's a safe thing to begin to think about and talk about and frankly work on, right?
Yeah. I mean, the best analogy I could give there is right now, I think the culture around fitness, right?
Yeah.
This is gonna make sense. The culture around fitness is very motivated, right? So nowadays, marketing is zero sugar, boot camp, transformation. Everything is fitness nowadays. A person that opens up a hamburger spot that isn't vegan or healthy, it's probably not going to be successful. Everybody wants the sweet greens, the healthy alternatives, you know, the paleo diets, all those things. So we're in an era or a culture shift where fitness is the driver.
Yeah.
But some people or the majority of people are still neglecting the mental fitness, right?
Yep.
So people are training their bodies, they're going to the gym. They don't realize they're actually training the mental health, right?
Yeah.
They are going to the gym to release stress. They are, you know, making all the possibilities of, you know, getting outside, getting some sunlight, all those things, you know, provide that mental health segue into feeling better. But I think there has to be a shift where people treat the physical fitness the same as the mental fitness. So that includes, you know, seeing a therapist, like you said, just being vulnerable, making some very, very hard, you know, asking yourself some very, very hard questions as to, hey, maybe I'm not okay today. And as I look forward, how can I, you know, help myself feel better? Yeah. Does that make sense? Because life is not easy, right? Life is hard, whether you are a kid, whether you're an adult. Life throws curveballs. Not every day is easy, but hey, that's the beauty of it, right? If everything was going great every day, then it'd be kind of boring, right?
No, I love that analogy with physical health, because it really is a practice, right, of mental health, right? You know, going back to the physical aspect, like the first time someone tries to, I don't know, squat or do a deadlift, like the form's a little bit shaky. It's not just because the muscles are shaky, right? And that develops over time, but it's the form too. And it really is a practice. And even after the years of squatting or doing deadlifts, like you can probably still go in there and like have a rough day. As I do, I just feel like it's not connecting, but you keep doing it because you know it's going to develop the muscles, and you keep doing it because you know what the actual motion is, and you're trying to perfect that over time. And to your point, I think that mental health is a very much the same way. We have to keep developing these practices, more of what practice that is, right? Where that's, you know, therapy, other aspects that you use for developing your mental health. Those are all good there.
One thing that really helped me kind of put it into perspective is I started going to therapy about 3 years ago, and the therapist one day said, you have to approach each individual as if they were having the worst day of their life.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And that for me kind of like, it shifted everything. It was like, I am more empathetic. I don't get triggered as much by people having a bad day. So for example, you go to the grocery store, somebody cuts you in line. Right. What's your reaction? Hey, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? But maybe they're cutting you in line because they have to go pick up their child. They're late. You don't know what they're going through, right? Nowadays, like, it's very sad, but suicide is very relevant. It's like you don't know what that person's going through. And by you taking a more empathetic decision, this is going to sound cliche, but maybe you're saving their life. Maybe you're making their life a little bit easier where they don't go off the cliff, right? And that's a metaphor. That's not really – I don't want them to go off the cliff, but that's kind of like what changed my shift into mental health. The other shift was my wife. So my wife is in the healthcare space, and she started to, you know, plant some seeds early on in the relationship. And she's like, hey, maybe you should go see a professional, because you have a lot of great things, but you have some things that you could work on that are going to make the good things or great things that you have even better. And you're going to be able to tie that into your career. You're going to be able to tie that into your family. You're going to be able to tie that into a better mental space for you.
Yeah. No, man, it's what you mentioned about those like small acts is that's the difference. Like that is the difference. It doesn't always have to be this huge saving moment where someone comes down from the sky. It could just be as nice as saying hello to someone some days. Like, frankly, like, hey, dude, like, one of the questions I'll ask here in a bit is just like how often people feel listened to today, with just all the different pulls and all the different attentions and all the things are going from one thing. So generally starting up a conversation with someone in line at the grocery store, at Starbucks, wherever you're at, and saying, hey, how's it going? What's going on? Like that could make, that might be the only time someone genuinely asks that, which is a scary thing, but might be the only time someone genuinely asks that person how they're doing was that entire day, maybe even that week, sadly. And that's a very small moment, but makes such a big difference in all of our lives.
One of the, I guess, unpopular opinions nowadays is, you know, airplane conversations. For me, I love speaking to people on airplanes. And the older they are in age, the more interested I am in the conversation.
Yes.
And I swear by it. I think I picked it up on one of my dad's best friends. He is a doctor in Colombia. He got his MBA from UCLA. So very, very, very involved in business. But he started posting on Instagram his airplane, you know, not conversations, but his stories. And he would kind of like write his post every flight he took and share about the experience. Sometimes your flight gets delayed, sometimes this, sometimes that. So I've always had kind of that inspiration, but just to talk to people on a plane, right? Some people are going to a funeral, so it's probably not the best flight for them. You could offer a conversation. Some people are going to meet their grandchildren for the first time. You know, it's like a very, very big range of things that could be happening on an airplane. Some people are going to see their husband, you know, for the first time. Maybe they started on online dating website and that's how it goes. Or maybe they're traveling for work for the 47th time that week, you know, from DC to San Francisco. So it's like, you never know. So the conversation there is always good. That is like how I love to talk to people, you know, on those small acts throughout the day.
Dude, it's, as soon as you mentioned the airplane conversations, I smiled because like, it's such a thing that I've experienced it too. And whether it be airplanes, like Uber drivers probably have the most tea on anyone. If you're really being honest, like they just, like they have everything. It's so important, right? Because it's a person to some degree that you're like, oh, I just sharing an hour, 2 hour, sometimes three, right, on a plane with this person. And to your point, there almost needs to be a podcast, I think to some degree, like airplane conversations were podcasts before a podcast, I guess, but there needs to be a podcast just for older people sharing some of their values. Maybe we'll work on it together there, but you learn so much for them. You learn so much for them.
I'm in. I'll be the first episode.
I think this is all important there. And one thing that we kind of can double back on is that listening component, right? We talked about that from active listening and professional aspect, but it's just as important from just a day-to-day level. So, you know, what are some of the times in your life where you feel most listened to today? Obviously, we have our partners. Hopefully, they're doing a great job of listening to us. But beyond even just that relationship, like, when do you generally just feel listened to?
Yeah, I mean, I feel listened to at work, to be honest. I think I'm very lucky. That's amazing. I'm very lucky to have had a great leader that listened to what I wanted to do with life. Yeah. So for example, let's double back on my wife's situation. So she is a Colombian doctor that moved to the United States 4 years ago. She's now pursuing her certifications to practice here as a doctor, which are three exams. Throughout, you know, that process, she has to do, you know, clinical research, clinical rotations to build up her U.S. experience as she applies to U.S. residency.
Yeah.
Now, getting into U.S. residency, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's not really where you choose. It's where you match. So every year around March, there is the match, and that match matches you with the residency program. And sometimes it's very close to you. Sometimes it's on the other side of the country. So that was something that I was very clear about with my leadership as I started to hear about, you know, what that would look like for my family situation. And that's where I really felt heard. You know, they were very attentive to what I had to say. I felt listened, and I was very, very happy to you know, be privileged with a manager like that.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I think it just always comes full circle. Like that's a very human thing, empathetic thing. Like we would all want to be treated with that respect to listen to that and understand that, hey, we have things outside of what we do for our day job. And, you know, there's no one more important to you in life than, you know, your significant other. So, of course, you're going to make the decision that is going to be best for you, your significant other and your family there.
Yeah. And the other aspect of life I feel listened to is coaching, right? Yeah. I value that a lot. I think some educators or coaches take it for granted, but the impact you're having on those individuals, not only from a sports perspective in my case, but just a human perspective, is very, very huge. It's like they are listening to me because they trust me. They feel like I am inspiring. And that's something where I definitely feel listened to. Like I could tell, you know, Grant, I'll use one of the kids I coach. I'll tell Grant, Hey Grant, you're doing this very well, but you're doing this poorly. And he's like, coach, I know, like I'll change it. And the rest of the game, it doesn't happen. And if it does happen, it's not by his choice. So like the ability for them to be so receptive is like so, so satisfying for me as an educator. And then it goes both ways, right? I like for them to be listened to. So some of the things we do at the end of practice is life lessons, right? Sometimes it's me with the life lesson. Sometimes it's them, right? They're getting into an age where they're going to high school and they maybe have, you know, some questions or concerns in regards to, hey, you know, how do the periods work in high school? Like, what's the bell schedule? All those things that, you know, you probably have the answer to and they're going to listen to you.
So another part of our episodes is our three C's, right? C3 stands for clarity, connection, and co-creation. And I love to just ask a question on each one of those. For me, clarity just centers around a lot of what we talked about today here, Mateo, of understanding ourselves, understanding the people around us. And even if we're not crystal clear in everything, at least being clear on the things we're trying to find out. In sales, that typically transitions to, hey, what are you trying to solve? What's the problem? What are your priorities? Why are we even doing this? What's your mission? But you talked about helping people reach that clarity, right? Like, hey, how can we help, whether that be in professional life or the kids we're coaching, reach the clarity about what's important to them? If they're unsure, do you have any specific techniques or ways you go about helping people find their own clarity?
Yeah. I mean, it's the ability to be empathetic and vulnerable. Yeah. And then tying that to small achievable goals that you can help them set that are going to lead to that big goal. Because sometimes I think people or individuals, myself included, we can't see the long picture unless we start seeing little, you know, pictures before that. So I think the best way to achieve clarity, whether it be, you know, kids we coach, people we talk to, customers that we help, is through set small achievable goals that they can reach, they can visualize in whatever it is that they do. So for example, in a sales process, they have to understand what that next call is going to be about. They have to understand where we are going to focus the majority of the time. All those things that are bringing clarity to the sales cycle right there, that's what's going to help them really, you know, be successful in independent if they are unclear or clear in your vendor, you know, choice.
Yeah. I love that answer because it shows that clarity isn't a one-time thing. Many things in life are one time, right? It's like, it's a practice. I specifically use that word, or it's an eyeing, like it's a verb, right? And by you being clear on those next steps and being clear on, hey, this is the journey, you're in a way saying, this is how I provide more clarity along this path with you there. So for connection, you know, we talked about how that can impact everything from data to experience or storytelling, which you've been a very big proponent of in our love there. Is that typically the best way you see to provide that connection towards where someone is now to where they want to go? Is that storytelling process?
Yeah, I think that is the best way to not only move the sales cycle quick, right, from, you know, your company perspective, but also to value the customer's time, right? If they can relate to your storytelling from that first call, not only have you gained their trust that you are the trusted advisor there to help, but you're also helping them, you know, implement faster. You're helping them go to market faster. A lot of these companies that are buying SaaS solutions or these products, they are buying it as an investment. So for Okta, they needed, you know, single sign-on, they needed, you know, Federation, SSO, they needed a bunch of other things that were going to allow them to onboard more customers. So they were going to be able to unlock additional, you know, money for their business that we are helping them do. So if you can move the sales cycle quick, not only is it beneficial for you, but it's beneficial for them. They're unlocking revenue that they didn't have before.
Time to value is is the industry term for all that, right? It's like, how quickly do I get to use the thing I just bought and reap the benefits that you promised me in the sales cycle?
It's like you buying a Ferrari and you have to go through a 6-month, you know, sales process. It's like, when do I get to drive this thing 25 or 30 miles over the speed limit?
when do I put the keys in and start going?
Yeah, exactly.
Last one is co-creation. You talked a bit about this as well, just based off of how you co-create and exist and build that team culture, the empathy, the transparency you build within that, both professionally and as a coach there, and with customers. One of the biggest things we talk about within tech, obviously, is like these mutual success plans, mutual project plans, mutual goals plans. Like, it's always mutual and planned somewhere in there. And really, that is kind of what you talked about, this very clear path to get from, hey, this is where I am today to where I want to be. You know, I'm hopping onto the lot, and then in X amount of minutes and X amount of steps, I can be driving off with my keys in the Ferrari for the exact same thing we just talked about. What's the best way to co-create that such that, you know, customers are invested and they feel like, hey, I have a very clear path to getting to where I want to go versus this ambiguous, I'm just talking to a SaaS company conversation?
Yeah. Give them the satisfaction of belonging.
Yeah.
So make sure, I always like to be the last one to speak in a room, because I could listen to everyone's opinion, and my opinion's not going to be, you know, hindering their judgment. So they could speak freely. And that's something that I've found a lot of success with, because sometimes I've seen sales engineers or solutions engineers, they lead with their opinion. And now the customer is like, oh, like maybe I shouldn't think that way, because this guy's not going to like me, or this girl's not going to like me.
Yeah.
For example, I'll give you a quick one. Sometimes these customers have different vendors that they are trying to analyze. And sometimes the vendor is the better solution, you know, for their use case.
Yeah.
So if I'm a solutions engineer and I jump on the call and I start bashing that competitor, think about how open you are to tell me your actual problems, because you are going to feel like I am just trying to kind of like, you know, deflect them or go around them or show you why our product is better, not actually trying to help you solve the problem. So if I'm the last one to listen, I'll give them the sense of belonging that they could speak freely and that they are here, right? And that we are here for them to get to their goal, which is a successful, you know, solution.
No, I love that, because one thing I always say or learn from therapy is what people say often tells you more about them than it tells you about yourself. So if you're going and bashing, that is a very clear statement about that professional. And then two, you know, that shows that you're not there for the why, right? The mission we talked about is, hey, we're here to solve problems. And the more time you spend talking about something beyond how you help me, the more I question if you're here to solve the problem I have, and trust that you're going to do my best, going to act in my best interest there. We're towards the end of today's episode there. So we'll begin wrapping up. First and foremost, Mateo, thank you so much for your time. It's been a great conversation with you. I've learned a lot. I learned a ton. I know we're sharing a ton from your experience, your unique journey, this inspiration you've had along that path, and just the tools you use for clarity, tools you use to inspire others and make sure you're being a part of a team that is high performing there. You've given so much to us from the listener's perspective and for our conversation. How can we give back to Mateo? Anything that you would ask of our listeners?
Yeah, I think I definitely have some heartfelt words. I think whoever is listening there or out there should use my story, my experiences as a way to dream. And, you know, embrace the challenges, celebrate the victories, but just never underestimate the power, you know, of your own resilience, right? You've got the strength, you've definitely got the passion, the courage to make it happen. You just have to believe in yourself. I promise you, somebody out there is waiting for you to shine. You just have to have the courage to kind of like challenge that status quo, to get out there, to believe in yourself. If it's been like 6 days and you're still experiencing that you are not happy with what you're doing, it's probably because you should be doing something else. And that's exactly how I felt. And whenever somebody feels that way, there is always another option. it might not be right now, right? It took me 2 years to transition fully into tech, but it might be later. So just surround yourself with individuals. I will offer, you know, a conversation to anybody that's looking to transition. I know a lot of people that have transitioned not only from sports, but from teaching, from financial institutions to pre-sales. Anybody that's looking to transition into pre-sales in general or tech, hit me up on LinkedIn, hit me up on social media. I'm more than willing to, you know, offer a conversation, some advice, any certifications that I've done, any books that I've read, connect you with any individuals that may be hiring and see how we could, you know, help you transition if you are looking to make that jump.
Amazing. Thank you, Mateo. We really appreciate you sharing your experience, your generosity, the offer again to help others on their journey. And then maybe in a couple episodes, we'll have you back on and talk about where you're at in your journey and some more things around coaching and what we can learn from you. But we just can't thank you for everything that you share with us today. And I really genuinely appreciate you.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm very grateful to be able to share these stories. This is the perfect, channel or segment, because the core values that you're bringing to the table are the ones I share as well. So the fact that I got the opportunity to do it on here is very satisfying and rewarding. So thank you, Myron. I think the next episode will definitely have some interesting curveballs in my area, and very excited to see, you know, the success of the podcast as you start to bring more people on.
I appreciate just being to create the space and learn with everyone. It's human first learning community at its core. So awesome.
Sounds good. Well,
thank you so much, Mateo. I appreciate you, and we'll be talking here soon. Wait, friend, before you move on, take the time to gift yourself the Sea of Clarity or Community. With so many pulls for our time and attention today, one of the best gifts we can gift ourselves is a moment to simply breathe and be present. To gently process our experiences, emotions, and thoughts with grace and non-judgment. To do this, take the next 2 remaining minutes of today's episode to practice simply paying attention to yourself. Or maybe gift yourself and or others community by connecting with us online. You can thank today's guest, share your experience and lessons, or connect with others as well. To do this, go to the website c3.community or our C3 Community LinkedIn page, or of course, our YouTube channel. As always, friend, thank you for listening in and for choosing to be a part of our community. We hope you take a few precious moments for yourself. See you soon.